Okay, this is definitely the first time that I've ever represented the United States government in human rights work. But, you know, hey, maybe Obama's second term, he'll be more creative and anything's possible. The one thing I will say is I can't speak about David Sullivan because without the UPR, we would have never had the relationship we had with our government. David Sullivan, I know he's not here today, but when we did talk to him, he was very open, even saying, it's a holiday in Geneva, my kids might be off, I'm trying to spend my time. And so the great news is they're actually people, which I think she points out as well. There's many constraints, many different aspects. So when we think about working with our government and meeting with them, they have families, they have other aspects as well, and they're just people trying to do their jobs and their positions. And throughout the 2 years, the best thing about David Sullivan was anytime I wanted to call or send an email, there was actually a response within 48 hours to talk back and to be able to participate. And that never existed before with the UPR. Briefly, with some of the comments made by our distinguished diplomat from Burkina Faso, I think she gave great insight to the resolutions. We're mainly talking about UPR, but the resolution process, because most people don't know how that works, and it's very interesting. There's, throughout the three-week session of the Human Rights Council, a certain government will take the responsibility of authoring or shepherding a resolution through the Human Rights Council. And many people think they go to the Human Rights Council and speak on an agenda item, and then it's all done. I can go home now. I gave the big speech. But the truth is it's the small meetings on the side that she described to bring the resolutions forward and to work with all of the governments to find the language that many can agree with. And if things work out the best, then they will try for the closest to consensus. But the truth is there's no way that everybody does agree. But it really is a fascinating process to be an NGO, to participate and to listen and to attend all the preparatory meetings. And it's a very important way that people should consider in the future to participate at the Human Rights Council. Those resolutions are very important that way. Getting back to the UPR now, let me say some of the examples that I could say both positive and negative with our relationship with our government on that and how they worked with us. Truth is, there's a genuine dialogue that never existed before between the U.S. foreign and domestic. This comment made this morning about Switzerland, you know, being this model to the world, but then at home not so much and not really sharing or discussing. I think that's similar in many countries as well. The United States is famous for that, this discussion of a beacon of liberty and freedom and democracy, but totally different at home. So what was really important for the first time is that the U.S. State Department or the Ministry of Foreign Affairs actually talked with the Department of Justice, the Department of Housing, the Department of Education, the Department of Indian Affairs. And then, of course, since the U.S. was fighting many wars, the Department of Defense, unfortunately, had to be involved in many of the negotiations as well. So it forced the country and the government administration bodies to actually talk with one another. And that just never happened. Usually the State Department would go away to Geneva, say something, and at home, no one knew what was said or done. And so that was very, very important. The other aspect as well for NGOs is we never talked as much with other NGOs at the Geneva level. And I think that's important because what she mentioned is it always seems like there is a professional group of NGOs that are based in Geneva, and many governments feel that they don't really represent the people on the ground. And so we had to have meetings with the NGOs based here to say, we've done the research, we're bringing the people who are directly impacted by the domestic policies in the United States, and we have to ensure that their voice is heard and not just you giving a statement and you coordinating as it's always done. So that was very valuable for us, and we established new partnerships where we really do work together now and can help one another. And then also meeting with other governments. It was a great way for me to walk up to every government in the room and just say, hello, I'm with the U.S. NGOs. These are our questions. Can we really talk? And it is that truth of we do have to create the channel, especially smaller missions. They have so many duties and so many things to do. Where more? You want me just to say, it's right there. I mean, okay. And so I know what Philip said because you can't see anybody when you put it right there. But that's another very important part of what we did is we went to all the missions and then made the information as simple as possible. You can't go there and expect them to do the research on your own country. The best that you can make it of issue, questions, and recommendations simplified based on your 5-page report is very beneficial. So we learned that a lot as well, working with all the other missions. And a couple of things inside the country that I think was very important for the diplomatic and the administrative part is in our country, they did something that a lot of states haven't. So this was a plus. The United States actually went to 13 different cities in the country, and civil society had a dialogue with them for usually around a day. It was a day-long visit. In each different city they met, they had different themes. So they worked just on indigenous rights one day at a Native American reservation. They worked on housing in Chicago. They worked on the issue of discrimination in New Orleans, looking at post-Katrina. They looked at the issue of LGBT in San Francisco and other economic, social, and cultural rights. They looked at the issue of race in Birmingham, Alabama. So that was really positive. It's never been done. You can never get the State Department to go around the country. And they always say they have no money, which is so shocking for NGOs. You know, that we just don't have any money for this. I'm like, you don't. We don't. You know, how can this work? So we would sometimes co-sponsor if we had a strong NGO in the area and then organize it together. And that definitely never happened. So the ability to be able to control the agenda and work together never happened before the UPR. That never happened with ICCPR. That definitely never happened with the CAT. That definitely never happened with CERD. There was much more. Everything was done just within Washington, D.C. And as someone from Hawaii, that's always disappointing when you can't participate directly. The other thing that was negative, though, about the tour, they described it as a listening tour. So they didn't come to talk or give positions or state anything. They said they were just there to listen. And that was great, because no one's ever thought the government listens to them. But then people didn't expect them to just sit there and not say anything after they told them everything for an hour of complaints or concerns. And they were like, we're just here on a listening tour. And of course, that didn't work in the indigenous community, because they were like, okay, you have listened. Now it's time for your turn to talk. So that's always exciting. The other part that was very good, that was important, because you have to give both, is here in Geneva. In Geneva, when the governments are hosting these UPRs, they do want to look really good. So the U.S., they do have the budget. It's the first time you're invited into the mission. It's like a Fort Knox compound. You can't bring your phones in or anything else. But there was a dinner. It was a chance for all the NGOs to informally, over snacks, talk with all of the delegates. They brought 34 delegates from Washington, D.C. So it was anyone who could answer any question was all there. So for people who work on the ground in their communities, they've never met the people. So all of a sudden you're like, this is the person I try to find. This is the person I read on the Google. This is every. So it was a great opportunity at those dinners to network. The other thing governments love to do is they make great paraphernalia. We had bookmarks with Eleanor Roosevelt on everything. We had books about Geneva and America. We had books about America's experience in human rights. We're like, these are, I mean, great for my classroom, but no one's ever seen them before. So it was a very fascinating experience to see all this material describing how great the country is doing. So it was great, because then we used that in everything we did. We did. Eleanor Roosevelt looked at economic, social, cultural rights, and Franklin Delano Roosevelt looked at the right to housing and health care. So should we. And we just used Eleanor Roosevelt on everything. And so did they. So it was all of a sudden we spoke the same language for the first time. So that was very valuable. One more really positive one that America does deserve credit for, so this is good for someone to hear me actually say this once, is they did a town hall meeting in Geneva. So after they did the UPR with all the governments, it was kind of an Oprah style, but they hired a moderator, and any NGO could go and then ask a question of the government, and the government would respond. So it was only 90 minutes, but it really was a mini UPR. And the discussion, even the government admitted at the end, was even better than with the other governments, because there's people in the U.S. who really knew everything with the person at the government who's supposed to be responsible for it, And it was this intense back and forth. So that was very good. Of course, we had some problems. We had Julian Assange there from WikiLeaks. So that made some exciting because he never participated with our coalition. And we had to try to say, this is about the U.S. and us, and we value the work that you do, but let's work together on this so the entire event works very well. So the town hall meeting, I think most governments should try one of those. I think most NGOs should ask their government, not as big maybe, because you won't have 100 NGOs, but to have a meeting in Geneva to then begin the work going back. Because the truth is, this is where the U.S. went downhill. After the town hall meeting, before the and after the consideration, before the adoption at the next Human Rights Council, it's so hard to keep momentum. And it was very hard for the U.S. to agree to a meeting. And this is where I think it went downhill. We felt stifled. Anytime we asked for the meeting and the date, the government's like, it's so difficult to find a date. It's so hard. And in the end, they would be the week before, we picked this date. And we'd be like, we've been asking you for 2 months about a date, you know, 1 month out or 3 weeks out, so everyone can participate and be as inclusive as we were in the beginning. But that really didn't happen. And then I can honestly say now, because November 5th, 2012 will be the 2-year anniversary, there wasn't enough follow-up. And so even though they said they'd meet and do things, it genuinely doesn't happen as much. And I would say civil society is also at fault. We haven't organized as much as we did and push as hard as we did to get the 13-city tour and to get the town hall meeting. All of that wouldn't have happened without us pushing hard. And after a 18-month campaign to do the UPR, NGOs have so many other concerns and challenges and issues that they work on that's specific to them that we also have some responsibility to do more. And I would say that is really the main points. And I guess the main thing is I listened to the Switzerland statement yesterday, and it was a great quote of that Eve said about failing in some ways to be as successful as the first one and being as comprehensive and collaborative. So it's a good warning call to us in Hawaii and the U.S. to make sure that starting November 5th, it's okay. We have a film festival in Hawaii. And on November 5th, the night before the big election, we will make it a big point to make sure the next 2 years are much more interactive and go up to a next higher level for diplomatic and working together. But it was a great experience for us to work with the diplomats much more, and we found them very competent and creative and willing to work if you're prepared.
Merci, Joshua, pour cette expérience. Il faut dire aussi que c'est vrai que ça a été assez spectaculaire, mais il faut aussi dire qu'il n'y avait plus la présidence Bush et que c'était aussi un nouveau mandat et que c'était Obama qui était élu et qui voulait donner une autre image de la politique américaine. Ça, je pense quand même que c'est important à dire aussi. En tout cas, merci pour ces précisions. Donc, sans plus tarder, je vais passer la parole. On va prendre une série de questions et, auxquelles on répondra.